My name is Jason Kirtman. I'd like to take this second to thank you right now for taking this class, Properties of Survival. And this class should take probably 30 to 35 minutes to complete with the testing time. So take a look at the left. You'll see the slide area. You can click on that slide area as we go along when I prompt you to proceed to the next slide. Don't forget that when you're completed, you want to click on the link that allows you to go to the testing area. Once you've completed your test, I will email you back with your results and your certificate. And if you'd like to take the test over again for a higher score, just let me know and we can do that. So thank you again for taking this class. Go ahead and click on the next slide area now. We're going to talk about the three primary elements of survival. They are awareness, assessment, and response. Go ahead and click anywhere in the slide area now to go on to the next slide. We're going to talk about condition white. Condition white is really simple. It's when you're unprepared for violence and you're not alert to any symptoms or signs of violence. You're going about your business in an ignorant daze. Most car accidents happen because drivers are in condition white. You don't ever want to be in condition white. The only time really that it's acceptable to be in condition white is if you're asleep. And even then, you want to have some sense of alertness if you can. If you can, be a light sleeper. Be a light sleeper. By all means, I know this isn't possible. If you're a heavy sleeper, you're a heavy sleeper. And if you're not, you're not. But you do want to try to be aware and at least condition yourself to be alert to sounds, unfamiliar sounds, different sounds, sounds that aren't routine when you are asleep. For example, if you're asleep and you hear the sound of glass breaking, hopefully you can condition yourself or know that, hey, this something's wrong. Somebody might have broken into my house through a window. I need to get up and find out what's going on. Condition white, though, that is when you're completely unprepared for violence and you're not alert to symptoms or signs of violence. You go ahead and click on the slide, and let's go on to the next slide. Condition yellow. This is a relaxed alertness. You're not tense or nervous, but you're maintaining mental awareness of your surroundings and possible intent of others. You're looking and noticing who is present, and you're also taking a mental note of what routes or routes of escape in every situation you find yourself in. Condition yellow. Go ahead and go on to the next slide. The next condition is condition orange. This is when you perceive a threat. You have a perception of a threat, but you still know that the threat is unknown in nature. For example, that sound of glass breaking we talk about. That could indicate a burglar, or it could indicate just an animal in the backyard knocking something over. But condition orange can bring about what's known as BAR, which is the acronym for Body Alarm Reaction. Go on to the next slide, and we'll talk about that for a little bit. BAR, body alarm reaction, causes an increase in blood pressure, pulse, and rate of respiration. This is generally caused by a quick and threatening perception. For example, I've had this happen to me when I've been coming up over a hill and there's a car coming the other way that's passing a vehicle and it's in my lane. I've got to react quickly to avoid a collision. What happens? My blood pressure goes up, my pulse and rate and respiration. You know, it's that feeling you get, and it feels like your heart jumps up into your throat. We've all had that, something quick and sudden that brings about a physical response. That's body alarm reaction. Click and go on to the next slide. Condition red. You perceive an immediate danger to yourself. With a direct threat, you immediately take cover, draw your firearm, control the lanes of escape, and use verbalization to engage and challenge the threat. Condition red, that's when you go into action. You go into action to control the situation and react to save your life or the life of a loved one. Click and go on to the next slide. Condition black. This level corresponds to a direct lethal assault in progress. This is a non-negotiable situation. This action requires the need to neutralize the situation by shooting to stop the attacker. Again, this is a non-negotiable situation. Go ahead and click and go to the next slide. Let's talk about the benefits of awareness. When you're aware of things going around and perceiving threats, the first benefit is that you can escape trouble by avoiding it. If you see trouble, you can avoid it and therefore escape it. This also creates time for planning. If you can't completely escape it, the trouble is following you, you've given yourself a time barrier, a time buffer, where you can start thinking, what am I going to go next? You start looking around, seeing what's cover, what's concealment. This creates time for planning, and most importantly, what's my best route of escape? If the assailant knows you're aware and possibly prepared, he might say, this is going to be too much trouble for me. I'm going to find another victim. Click and go on to the next slide. Threat assessment. You must understand the level of jeopardy facing you. The attacker may mask his true intentions. The severity of potential harm may not be completely evident. We know this is obviously true. If somebody approached you and said, get in my car so I can take you somewhere and do harm to you, you're not going to get in his car. But if he walks up and says, hey, my car's broke down just down the road, will you take me to get some gas? You'd be more apt to help somebody out like that. So you have to be aware that your attacker may mask his true intentions. Number two, your response needs to be appropriate to the perceived level of threat, which leads me to number three, overreaction. You do not want to overreact. I talk about this in my concealed carry class about an individual one time. I was going into Walmart, and this individual was coming out of Walmart, and it appeared that he was looking right at me with his eyebrows down, you know, and that look of hate, eyebrows down, that cold, dead stare. And my first thought was, is this somebody I've arrested? I perceived a potential threat. Now, I could have reacted, and I could have overreacted. What I decided to do was observe him, step to the side, maintain a little distance. What I noticed then, he walked past me, went to his wife, who stepped out of the vehicle and handed him his wallet. He was mad at himself. He was staring at her, which was right behind me, because he went in, bought some things, and then left his wallet out in the truck. He had to go out and get it and then go back into the store to pay for it. But if I had overreacted, let's say worst-case scenario, I drew down on him. Step back. You're making me uncomfortable. Why are you looking at me that way? You know, that's completely absurd. What would happen? I would be arrested at minimal for peace disturbance, possibly assault and possibly brandishing a firearm and unlawful use of a weapon. So overreaction can cause legal problems, and you must avoid overreaction. Click on the next slide. The elements of response in order of importance, and you want to remember this because this may come up again later on a next page. Your elements of response in order of importance. Proper tactics. Proper tactics. It involves everything we've talked about. Awareness, planning, knowing your routes of escape. Your skill with the weapon. Doesn't do any good to have a firearm if you can't hit, if you don't know the fundamentals of marksmanship, if you can't hit anything every time. Talk about that a little later. Proper choice of weapon. I have ladies out on the range. They go in and they buy a J-Frame Smith & Wesson because it's small. It fits good in their hand, and they can conceal it in their purse. But when they get out to the range, they find that the trigger pull is just too heavy, and they can't fire it. So you got to have a skill with the weapon, and you need to have a weapon that you're familiar with and that you can shoot time and time again. Click on the next slide. There's a lot of debate between what kind of calibers are better for self-defense than other calibers. You've got to remember that a hit with a 9mm is a whole lot better than a miss with a 45. It doesn't really matter what you carry, as long as you can place that shot. And by all means, a slow hit is better than a fast miss any given day of the week. Go on to the next slide. Let's talk about the rules for a gunfight. Most important rule, if you know you're going into a gunfight, don't go. For example, if you're going over somebody's house and you know that somebody is there that said they're going to do you bodily harm? You met them earlier in the day, and they might have threatened you. When you come to that party tonight, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to mess you up. You wouldn't want to go to that party. Find something else to do. Big deal. Like we said, the best way to stay out of trouble is to avoid it. Rules for a gunfight. Second thing, be courteous to everyone. Be courteous to everyone. What is it they say? An armed society is a polite society. That's very true. When you strap on that pistol, when you're carrying that pistol, you need to become a 10 times more polite person than what you might normally be without it. Be courteous to everyone. Drop your guard, though, for no one. Be polite and professional. Realize that everyone you see or don't see can present a threat. Immediately formulate a plan to neutralize every threat that you encounter. Let's go on to the next slide. Have a backup plan. You've got to remember that your primary plan probably won't work. We talk about emergency planning when I was at the police department, talking about what are we going to do if we have the big New Madrid earthquake fault. The New Madrid fault earthquake. What are we going to do? Well, we could plan for this and plan for that. We're going to go to this building and do this. We're going to get this equipment and go do this. But the truth is, under that situation, that building may no longer be in existence. That truck, that piece of equipment we might need, might be under 30 feet of rubble. You've got to have a backup plan, because 99 times out of 100 in a real emergency, your primary plan will do you no good at all, will not work. Use a firearm that works flawlessly every time with your carry ammunition. Now, that being said, I'm going to tell you right now, when it comes to firearms, most of the time, you get what you pay for. You know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about those cheap $100, $150 semi-automatics. I won't go into the name brands. Y'all know what I'm talking about. You get what you pay for. There's a name brand out there that's really, really cheap. The only and I've had several of them. I won't have any of their pistols. I did buy one of their carbines once, and it was decent enough to play around with. It wasn't anything that I would trust my life to. But when I was teaching the concealed carry classes back in Missouri, all of them that came to class did not work. Most of them, if they did fire one time, the firing pin broke almost immediately. And so I don't recommend that. You want to have a firearm that works flawlessly every time with your carry ammunition. The next rule is act quickly and decisively, but don't act too soon. If you act too soon, you may create a problem that wouldn't have happened otherwise. And definitely you don't want to overreact. This is all boils down to split-second decision making. And that is a skill. That is something that you can develop by what-if training. What I usually do for what-if training is when me and my wife go to a restaurant, I sit somewhere where my back is to the wall, but I can see the main entrance or the main exit. Sometimes I can even see part of the kitchen area, depending on where, what kind of restaurant it is and how it's laid out. But as I sit there, I begin to think, now what would I do if a person came through this door and had a gun and approached this person and demanded this? What would I do if a person came in through this door over here and had a knife and approached this person and did this? What would I do if this person over here, who's sitting next to his wife, started an altercation? How would I react? What would I do? And I would develop a mental library of those cases, of those scenarios. And the thought behind that is, when you develop a mental library, if you're sitting there and something actually starts to happen, you don't really have to sit and think about what you're going to do, because already you're going to draw from that mental library. You've practiced almost an identical situation in your mind. And that will help you to act quickly and decisively. It'll also help you to not act too soon or to overreact. Let's go ahead and click on the next slide. Rules for a gunfight. Use cover, use cover, use cover. If you can't find cover, concealment's better than nothing. Cover and concealment both have their place, and you have to know the difference. Cover is something that will possibly protect you from a round. Now, not everything is perfect cover, obviously, because there's different types of weapons and different kinds of rounds. There's different kinds of concealment. There might be in a restaurant a big flower bush. That would be concealment. When you go into a McDonald's, there might be different types of cover and concealment. About that, different types of cover and different types of concealment. And you can put those, implement those into your what if training when you're in the different restaurants and buildings and different places in public. Go ahead and click on the next slide. Anything worth shooting is worth shooting more than once. Don't stop shooting until the threat has stopped. Keep that in mind. However, once the threat has stopped, you must stop shooting. If you don't, in the eyes of the law, you have initiated a second event where you are the attacker. Case in point, the pharmacist from Oklahoma this last year. Some gentlemen came into his shop. He fired at them. One went down onto the ground. He chased the other one out. The other one, for all intents and purposes, I don't know if he was unconscious. He was laying on the ground. He had stopped shooting. The pharmacist came back up, stood over him, and fired more rounds into him. Guess what happened? He was charged with murder. So once the threat has stopped, once the threat has been neutralized, you must disengage. Slow hit is better than a fast miss any day. Realize that every shot you fire will go somewhere. A miss on your attacker may be a hit on an innocent person. You must take bystanders and backstops into consideration. Go ahead and click on the next slide. A hit with a small caliber round is better than a miss with a high caliber round. Move away from your attacker. Distance is your friend. Keep in mind that in 10 years, nobody's going to remember the make and model of the firearms that were used. They're only going to remember the individuals who lived. Make sure they remember you. Click on the next slide. If you are not shooting during an altercation, you should be doing the following: communicating, reloading, and or running. Communicating, reloading, and or running. Remember that. Click on the next slide. You want to win at any cost. Those who win get to go home and sleep in a bed. At least they get to sleep in a bed, maybe in a jail cell. But you've heard it said, it's better to be judged by 12 than carried by 6. The objective, of course, is to avoid both extremes. There is no such thing as a fair fight. Someone will have the advantage. Make sure it's you. Click on the next slide. Flank your adversary when possible and protect your own flanks. Watch the hands. Watch the hands. The eyes are the windows to the soul, but it's the hands that kill. After you stop your assailant, don't forget to scan for others. When scanning for bad guys, keep in mind, you want to look for body parts, arms, feet, hands, the smaller parts, because you'll probably have tunnel vision. You want to keep that in mind. You don't want to just look for a full body. It's those arms, feet, and etc. that are attached to that full body. Click on the next slide. Remember that the sooner the fight ends, the less shot you will get. The sooner the fight wins, how is the fight going to end sooner? Well, whoever has the most skills, whoever has the most advantage, will be the one that will finish the fight sooner. Let's talk about nonviolent dispute resolution. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Here you see two gentlemen who look like they are engaged in possibly a very heavy conversation. Click on the next slide. What is a conflict? Well, a conflict is a struggle to resist or overcome. It's a contest of opposing forces or powers. It's a strife or a battle, a state or condition of opposition, antagonism, discord, a painful tension set up by a clash between opposed and contradictory impulses. Go ahead and go to the next slide. There's two essential skills for conflict resolution. And that, you know, you want to go from conflict to cooperation. Those skills are neutralizing and redirecting. Neutralizing is any action that actually neutralizes negative behavior in order to meet them where they are and move to common ground. That common ground in a street situation, the common ground is where you both agree to disagree and walk away. If you can get to that point and nobody gets hurt, hey, that's great. redirecting any behavior that changes the direction of an interaction. Neutralizing precedes redirecting. Redirecting could be as simple as just changing the subject. Click on the next slide. Now, the best way to neutralize a situation is essentially just to walk away from it. But sometimes you have to do more than that. You can neutralize with body and facial expressions. Think about that. What are some ways that you could neutralize with body and facial expressions? Might even be as simple as a smile. When I was in choir class, they told us, you've got to look happy when you're singing. How can you smile while you're singing? I learned really quickly that the best way to give the impression, the illusion, that you're smiling when you're really not is just as simple as raising your eyebrows. Neutralize vocally with volume and speed. You can talk fast, quickly, affirmative, confident, and loudly. Don't engage your subject. Listen to them. Try to empathize, backtrack, clarify, summarize what you've heard. Let me get this straight. This is what you're wanting me to understand. Confirm. Make sure you got it right. These are all principles of a class that is taught in law enforcement called verbal judo. And that is part of the principle of conflict resolution. Go ahead and go to the next slide. You have to emotionally detach from verbal aggression. Remember that what is said on the street, it's nothing personal. Don't identify with the situation or take it as a physical attack. It's not. It's just words. You cannot respond to a verbal attack or verbal aggression in the same with physical. You cannot do it. You cannot respond with verbal aggression or verbal attack with a physical attack. To do so makes you, in the eyes of the law, the initial aggressor. Keeping all of this in mind, this has been the Properties of Survival class. Go on, click on the bottom right there, and you'll see the link that says to take, takes you to the testing portion of the class. Go ahead and do that. As soon as I get your results in, I'll mail them back to you with your certificate if you pass. If not, I'll give you the link again, and you can take the class again if you'd like. My name is Jason Kurtman, and I encourage you to get as much training as you can, even if it's just a few minutes online. Every certificate that you get can go into a training file and can help you in your defense should the worst thing happen, and that is that you find yourself at the defense table either being charged criminally or being sued civilly because you decided to take action to save the life of yourself or a loved one or a friend. My name is Jason Kurtman. Thank you for taking this test. I'll get back with you shortly.